This is Heather Johnson, and you're listening to the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, episode number 148, The Akashic Records with Heather Ivany. This podcast is for people who want to take their health physically, emotionally, and spiritually to a whole new level using Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing tradition from India. This is the Ayurveda Life School Podcast, and I'm your host, Heather Johnson. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the podcast today. Excited to have you all here for this beautiful interview that you're about to hear with Heather Ivany. It was quite a learning experience for me as we discussed the Akashic Records and how those can help guide us in our lives and what they even are. So if this is a new topic to you, I hope that you enjoy this. Before we get to that episode, I just wanted to give you one last invitation to join our spring cleanse. The cleanse begins this week. We're going to start with a beautiful kickoff call and an opportunity to start connecting as a group. And I've intentionally kept this cleanse just a little bit smaller so that we can really find that one-on-one connection. So if you're feeling heavy, bogged down, you're ready to remove that excess and just have more of a freeing spring and summer season, I invite you to learn more at ayurvedalifeschool.com/seasonal-cleanse. And now on to the podcast. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the podcast today. We are just enjoying a beautiful late February, early March season. And as part of this beautiful conversation we're going to have today, we're bringing a friend all the way from British Columbia. So I know a lot of you listeners are actually from Canada. So a neighbor is going to be joining us, which is beautiful. And we've got Heather Ivany with us today. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Heather. And hopefully you guys can keep the Heather straight on this conversation today. But I know, right? So Heather has trained and helped those who are wanting to study more about yoga, about Akashic Records, really about growth and development for over 20 years. So she leads trainings, classes, retreats, one that's coming up in November that looks amazing in Mexico. So we'll have to ask her about that today for sure. She's a registered ERYT 500 teacher. I think most of you will know what that means, but we'll go into it if you need to. But she has over 1,000 hours of training. As a yoga teacher myself, I can tell you that that is a lot of hours. So she's really experienced in that area and mentors privately individuals as well as small groups. What I'm really intrigued about about Heather is that she's an advanced Akashic Record guide. So that is something new to me, maybe new to a lot of you. And so we're going to talk a little bit more about what an Akashic Record session is, as well as the trainings that she offers to help people learn how to facilitate those. So coming all the way from Fernie, British Columbia. Hello, Heather. It's good to have you on the show with us today.
Pleasure to be here, Heather. Thanks for having me in.
It's beautiful. So as we're talking today, I think it helps us to know what's your come from. What's your journey that brought you to where you are today? Before we started recording, we mentioned that you're a mother, you have children, your life is very full. How did yoga find its way into that space beyond just, you know, teaching, but you really have taken it to a whole new level where you've brought it to a lot of people around the world. And then I want to know how you got into Akashic Records, and then we'll have to just go deep with that because it's going to be new for all of us.
Yeah, perfect. My journey with yoga, I guess if we want to go right back, I did grow up in a Catholic upbringing. And from a very small age, I had this recognition that I love this invitation to spirit, but I didn't like the confines of the church and the restrictions that the church had. And I always felt like there was a physical essence that was missing in the religion that I was brought up in. So I've always had this tendency to lean into spirituality. And it wasn't until I was in university where I left home for the first time and was finding the distance from home being quite challenging. So I started to take a few yoga classes that a friend of mine invited me into. And from there, it led into meditation. And that kept me kind of going on and off through most of my early 20s, late teens. And then it was total 180 for me. I had a background of teaching coaching, so extroverted activities. I did a lot of outdoor living programs when I was younger as well, and I did some forest firefighting. And then when I moved into the realm of yoga, it was asking me to teach and lead from an introverted space. So it was quite a different pocket that it was asking me to lead from. But that came about self-taught out of a book
Really? Wow, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was old school. So I was firefighting at the time, and I was part of a rappelling division. So we had to be within, say, 100 meters of that machine at all times in case we got a smoke call and had to go out. So anything that you could do around the machine for 10 or 12 hours a day, you're welcome to do it, but you had to stay within the vicinity of the machine. So I decided to get myself a book, and I taught myself yoga out of a book. And then my crew, which was a bunch of guys, were interested in me teaching them. So that's how I started. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I can just show you what I'm doing from this book. And the best part is, Heather, the very first time I stepped into a proper yoga studio was when I did my teacher training. I had never, ever been inside a yoga studio before my teacher training.
I love that totally organic beginning. And and if you've been doing this for 20 years, yoga wasn't as accessible. So that was probably the very best way for you to learn at that time anyways, because it wasn't something you found everywhere.
When I was in my teacher training, it was just the cusp before you started to find a studio on every kind of corner. It was still in sort of community centers, YMCAs, and the studio that I was taking it out of. Now, this is Victoria, BC. And at the time, I think it was one of two yoga studios in all of the island. So,
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So super fun. And then from there, it just started to tiptoe in. So I've completed my teacher training. And within, I would say, a year of completing my training and thinking that I'm embarking on this full-on career as a yoga teacher, I got pregnant. So I very quickly had to be able to take the practice and adapt it to mamahood and a partner that worked out of town. And I lived in a town where I didn't have any family. So the ability to make this practice non-negotiable for my own self-care, but then also being very lenient with myself so that I didn't become resentful of the situation that I was in, because my practice couldn't be as, you know, beautiful as I dreamed it would be when I was single. Right. So I had to.
When it evolved, I bet that helped you though, to relate more, especially as you began to work with clients one-on-one, because there's so much change and evolution that happens through our practice if we allow it, but we can't like get stuck holding on to what it was, that aparigraha. We have to let go and allow ourselves to release and not be attached. I love that. And I think pregnancy yoga, prenatal yoga, it's beautiful anyways. I mean, the whole practice is so enhancing to your connection with the baby and with yourself as a woman and how you're evolving. I think it's wonderful you kept practicing during that time.
Yeah, I enjoyed I'll be totally transparent. I enjoyed the experience of practicing pregnant, but I found practicing once baby was born very challenging at first, because I was holding on to this expectation of it has to be an hour. It has to be uninterrupted. I need to have absolute serenity in my environment in order for it to be proper.
Oh, that's never going to happen with any baby.
Exactly. Right. So I was pretty young. I was early 20s. So I remember the day when I got her to sleep and I rolled out my mat and I was maybe 10 minutes in and she woke up and I was infuriated. I was so angry that she was disturbing me. And just, it was like a knock on the head. And it was like, really? Is this really what the practice is about, to make you like have disdain for your children because you can't get to the practice itself? So that's when I started to redirect. And that's when I started to really start to see the opportunity that was being presented to me rather than the inertia that I thought it was creating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that stemmed and grew so much though. So that, you said your oldest is 16, right?
Yeah.
So that was 16 years ago. And from there, you've really developed a lot broader study, and the way that you teach is beyond just what's happening on the mat. So how did Akashic Records come into this? And then we have to talk about what they even are. But I just want to know, how did you find this way of teaching and this belief or this way of accessing, you know, consciousness?
Yeah, great question, because I think people need to hear sort of like the stepping stones when they're leaning into something new. I've always been a yoga teacher that has been interested in combining spirit with practice. So I haven't been a purely physical teacher from the beginning. And then that slowly started to lead me into offering more opportunities for quiet pockets through workshops, retreats, and training. So mm-hmm. I leaned into Yoga Nidra teacher trainings. Mm-hmm. The teacher trainings that I offered at a 200-hour and a 300-hour level were always had a strong basis in consciousness. And the Akashic Records flew into my life at a time when I wasn't even looking for it. So pandemic hit, studios shut down. I had this blessed opportunity to have more meditation spaces than I was mm-hmm. used to. And during my meditation practice, I got a little name of someone that I knew from my past came into my meditation space 3 days in a row. So by the third day, I was like, clearly I need to reach out to this individual. Now, this is a family friend that I knew growing up, but I hadn't kept touch with as an adult. And I just simply reached out and said, I'm not quite sure why I'm reaching out to you. Your name came up in meditation, and I'm trusting that you will know where this leads. Mm-hmm. And so she emailed back and said, you know, happy to hear from you. It's been a while. I am an Akashic Records teacher, and would you like to book an Akashic Records session with me? And I had been curious about the Akashic Records for years, but every time a teacher was suggested to me, it didn't really feel like a good fit. And so we booked a session. In the session, it came through that I was already unconsciously or subconsciously working with the records. And it was an invitation for me to bring it more to a conscious level. So I did one training privately with this teacher, and then I did a second training in a group space. And right after the second training, I was invited to start leading my own group. So to give you just a point of reference, Heather, from my 200-hour teacher training to my 500-hour teacher training, there was a 10-year gap in there. That's how long mm-hmm. I take to like integrate and assimilate and go into it. And from my Akashic sort of level one to being able to teach those trainings, it was about 6 months. So it was like three trainings in a row and then into teaching right away. And it's been flourishing ever since, and I love it.
Well, it's a space that I don't know a lot about. And so I'm excited to see how it's shifted and changed things for you. And then also how, when you work with people, what it does for them. Mm-hmm. So if somebody like myself is new to this, what are Akashic Records?
So Akasha means space or spirit. It's a Sanskrit word. It's some people know it as the book of life. So there's different ways that it's referenced in different religious texts. So some people know it as the book of life. Essentially, and even if you're not a conscious, like into consciousness as a study, it's the other way that I reference it is the quantum field, right? It's mm-hmm. the stuff that exists inside of the quantum field. So what we do with the Akashic Records is that every soul has an imprint that it leaves in the etheric realm, in the quantum field. Every thought, every deed, every action that we have has a ripple effect. This is a common conversation that we have without talking about the Akashic Records. And then what we can do with the Akashic Records is if you can get online with the fact that every action, deed, movement that we have in this lifetime has an imprint, well, that imprint is stored somewhere. And it's stored mm-hmm. in your own personal etheric book, if you will. And that also contains, if you're open to it, your past lives, as well as parallel universes and other dimensions that you've explored it from a soul level. And then what the Akashic Records does is, if I was to dial the radio signal that went into Heather Johnson's soul, there's a lot of information there.
Mm-hmm. So, well, if every thought and action has been imprinted, exactly. Probably a lot that I would like to understand when I'm not clear on why am I doing this or why am I feeling this way. This doesn't seem to be warranted based upon the situation I'm in. Mm. There has to be something behind it.
Yeah. So when you dial into that, then there's certain energy and light beings that will distill the information so that what comes through for you is relevant to the present moment that you're working with. So some people that work with the Akashic Records do what we call past life regressions. They spend a lot of time going through people's past lives and just sharing with them where they've been before. My call to action with the Akashic Records is to support people in aligning with their soul's purpose in this lifetime and getting clear action steps on how they can sort of link arms with their own soul and start to move forward in communion with it. So we might tap into, for example, your clairabilities. So we have, each of us has six clairabilities. So claircognizance is that inner knowing without being told. Clairsentient is the feelings that you get inside of your body, your yeses and your noes, the, for everything from your palms heating up in a Reiki session to like tingling down your spine or a gut feeling, any sort of a visceral sensation. And then you have clairaudio, which is the ability to hear certain sounds, clairvoyant, which is our most common. And most of us have a preconceived notion that if we're not clairvoyant, therefore we can't connect to consciousness in these communication realms. And that's like a myth that we need to debunk. And then there's also taste and there's smell. So by learning and understanding which clair abilities are strongest within you, it's the easiest way to access the records and let the records communicate with you.
Interesting. So how do you determine what is the strongest ability within a person when you're working with them?
So when I open up their records, usually how the process goes, just to give you sort of like a whole circle of how it would work. I spend the first few moments grounding and centering. So what this does is when we can massage the nervous system and soothe it into a softer space, it allows us to be more in a space of receptivity.
Yes. 100% agree. Yes.
Yeah. And when we're in that space of receptivity, then information flows through more naturally. So I spend a good 5 to 10 minutes just allowing us both to climatize with each other and attune with each other through a centering meditation. Then I, 99% of the time I'll do a banishment mantra. So I just want to ensure that we're working with the highest and greatest light. So I banish anything that's not serving us in this moment to not be in the space that we're in. And then there's an invocation that just helps to open up the individual's record. So it's a little mantra that I say, it's about 3 lines. And then when their records are open, everyone's field has a different texture than the person next to them. The same way that like your mom feels different to you than your girlfriend, which feels different to you than your kids. So everyone has a different texture. So I'll spend a little bit of time usually conveying to the person what their field feels like. I'm not very clairvoyant. So I use my clairsentience, so how it feels to be in their space, to put it into descriptive words. And then I also have a strong claircognizance and inner knowing. So I'll get little intuitive hits as to how to describe their space. And then what we do usually is I'll spend some time getting familiar with their guides and teachers. So each of us as souls has certain contracts that we make with other light beings that aren't in human form to support us on this human journey. So sometimes people refer to this as their archangels, but they're also just guides and teachers. So guides will be with your soul through your whole soul's journey. And teachers come in for certain lessons that you're working on, certain things that you're trying to understand more and get a different perspective on. Teachers will come in for just that moment in time and then they'll exit. So for some people, that might be 3 lifetimes. And for others, it might be 3 weeks. It just depends on the space of time that they're taking to learn that piece that they're honing in on. And then I'll start to do what I call an energetic body scan. Now, this is not what every Akashic teacher does. This is just the method that works best for me. So I'll energetically connect to your crown chakra. And as I start to staircase down through your body, the information from your records comes through And so I'll just start speaking out loud and start sharing what's coming through with, I'll look at claircognizance first. If it's not very strong, I'll move into the eyes, I'll move into the ears, and then we just keep going from there. But
so they almost have like a house for those different abilities, right? A location physically that you're able to tap into to be able to identify that.
Yeah. And for example, like Claire, this is where it just gets really fun. Clairvoyant for one person might be that when they're in meditation, they see a lot of hues, they see a lot of colors, mm-hmm. maybe they get images or even stories that play out in meditation. Clairvoyance for someone else might be their dream space. They get a lot of their downloads and information in their dream space, and that's where it comes through. And for others, it comes through in a waking state where you can be in a situation and you're taking in with your visual eyes way more than what other people in the room are taking in.
Interesting. You wouldn't even know unless you were talking with them to say, yeah. Are you seeing everything that I'm seeing? It's like the idea of, is my red the same as your red? Maybe not.
And what's fun is that most of us, when we're talking about our clairabilities, these have been with us since, you know, when we're just little wee ones. Mm-hmm. So to us, it's our normal. And what's beautiful is by in the session, when I'm sharing with them how they interact with life and how they interact with consciousness, there's a little bit of this like, well, yeah, doesn't everyone do that? And it's like, no. Like this is your wow factor. This is a bit of your it. And it gives them confirmation to continue to not even to continue to lean into that, but also to expand it. Because it's a little bit of their superpower mm-hmm. and they haven't been fully aware of it until it was brought to their attention that this is something that you have, but not necessarily the person sitting next to you.
That is so interesting. I think you're right. I remember my mom always saying when I was a kid, and it's something that I've had to cultivate again as an adult, but the ability to read a room, coming in and sensing the emotion and the energy coming from everyone in that space. And she said, I was always very quiet and watchful. And I've noticed as I've moved older, I kind of got loud and unwatchful through my, you know, middle years. And then as I've gotten a little bit more in touch with myself, I've come back to more of the quiet and watchful. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it's not something I ever thought of as a different, I just thought everybody else can feel that too. Like everyone else knows these things, they can see and feel these things, but having it validated that, no, this is something that's unique to your ability. It's kind of nice.
Yeah. And so the person sitting next to you there, let's say they have a little bit of clairaudio, they're the individuals that are able to hear the conversation that's being told in front of them, but they're catching the in between the lines. Mm. They're hearing things in between the lines that other people aren't hearing. They're able to hear nuances in the tone of voice that give far more information than the words that are being spoken. Mm-hmm. Right? Little things like that taps us into these abilities. So then how we expand them into the Akashic records is this physical form that we're in, it's quite dense, even though we're light bodies, but when we try and like touch, it's dense. It's a dense form of energy. The Akashic realm is a very light form of energy. So the easiest way to get these two sort of distinct dimensions to be closer towards each other is to move through the senses. So the senses are the easiest way to, same way that in yoga, we talk of how the breath is the connection between the known and the unknown realm, because mm-hmm. it connects with both of them. It's the same with our senses. Our senses are the easiest way for energetic information to transmit through our bodies. And it's the easiest way for us to also send information out, right? So this is why tapping into this, and identifying what your strong clairability is helps me to then work with someone in two ways. If they want to simply be aligning more with their soul's purpose, this is the accessible way for them to be in deeper communication with their guides and teachers. Or you can just say consciousness in general. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then the other side of a lot of passion that I have is supporting people in reclaiming their sovereignty, their spiritual sovereignty. And so it's not enough for me to just sort of sit on a bit of a pedestal and be like, I have all access to this information and you across from me need to rely on me in order to get this information to you. I kind of love to just like tear those walls down and offer people an opportunity. This Akashic Records is not reserved for any sort of elite mystic, priest, yogi, servant of consciousness. It's available to all of us. And if you want to be able to access it and use this either just on your own or implement it into your business, then I offer trainings. And when I'm in training, showing people how to access the records for themselves, we are using their primary clairability to help develop that sense within them.
Do you find that it's harder to do a reading virtually? Because I'm sure with COVID, most of yours have been virtual, but is there a big difference when you're in person with someone or when it's over, you know, a Zoom call, for example?
Yeah, it's more just like the mental cognitive belief system around that. We're working with a dimension where time and space doesn't exist.
That's true.
So I offer sessions in person, I offer sessions in Zoom, and then I also do sessions with the person not even present. Like if you and I did a session together, afterwards, what I say to people is, you know, I'm going to check in with you in a couple of days' time. I'm going to see how things are integrating, see how things are landing. But if something comes up between now and the time that I check in with you, you have full permission to text or email me and ask any questions that come up. And so sometimes an individual will text me and they just want me to check on something that we talked about. They want to sort of tunnel in a little bit further. So I can just go in to their records for 5 or 10 minutes, get the answer to the question that they had, and then relay it back to them without them being present with me.
It's funny because when I was first reading over this before we talked, I was like picturing you sitting with this book, right? She's got this great big book that she's reading from. And I knew that that wasn't really what was happening. But in my mind, it's almost like you're pulling out the encyclopedia of, you know, Heather Johnson or Jane Doe or whoever you're sitting with and helping them to access that. What is the benefit of knowing this information beyond just developing your own clairabilities, which I think is probably alone, stands alone as a positive reason to do this, but how does this support people as they're, you know, growing and learning and evolving, which is, in my opinion, the whole reason that we're here. So what is that? What do you see with clients?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways that we can spin the answer to this, and my head's kind of going. But what's coming to mind right off the bat is let's first look at like the three layers of trust, right? So we have trust in self, trust in others, and trust in God, consciousness, spirit, source, whatever words you like to put in there. The consistency with accessing the Akashic Records builds trust in all three of those areas, which helps to amplify our confidence, which gives us more ability to be seen, to be offering our medicine in a bigger way than we're used to be doing it. Mm-hmm. And it it also shines this beautiful light that welcomes other people in to do the same.
So it's almost like you're leading then from your highest self because you're accessing the true you that's there in existence from an accumulation of lives and experiences and thoughts, and but at a deeper level. So it becomes less of a superficial knowing of yourself and more of a deeper knowing.
Do you feel like that? Yeah, I love that. Yeah, bang on, 100%. Okay. Yeah.
Isn't that the biggest question we all ask is who am I really? So it's almost like it's helping to guide that answer so you can see yourself clearly in all your awesomeness.
Yes. Yes. The other piece that I like too about this is, you know, when people hear, when they hear that I say, you know, I help you to identify what your soul's purpose is in this lifetime. People get really jazzed up about that. It's almost like numerology or human design, right? People like to, they like to be identified and known. And what I share with them when they do come into session is this isn't going to be in the format that we oftentimes think it should be, in that, Heather, you need to sell your house, move to North Dakota, and you're actually supposed to be an accountant rather than a yoga teacher, right? It doesn't come through in that form. But for example, let me think of a client that I've worked with. So this individual was in an orbit where she was feeling very dimmed, and her soul's purpose, when we dove into it, is to unconditionally love herself every single moment of every day. And this sounds cliche, so just stay with me. When we identified that this is what her soul's purpose is, she then formed that into a sankalpa, or an intention of I am unconditional love, which then we moved into a 4-month mentorship program together. But in that time, she then curated this each and every day, where she gradually realized that the profession that she was in, she could not love herself unconditionally and still be in this profession. So she made the stages to start to leave and move into something else. And what was coming online for her was that she is very good with palliative end of life. So she moved into becoming an end of life doula. And this is what she's doing now as a profession. And so this aligning with I am unconditional love, because this became her momentum every single day, every action that she was taking was moving her closer to unconditional love, which then eventually spilled into this profession where she can now offer unconditional love to the people that she works with. Right.
It's almost like it changed her vibrational state to be in alignment with what was needed for her soul. And, you know, when you change the vibrational energy, if what you're doing currently doesn't match up with that, there's going to be all kinds of dissonance, which helps you to identify what's not in alignment versus what is. So it's interesting that that's what happened for her, because that's what it sounds like when I'm hearing that is, you know, her soul just knew this is not the path, but this is the path. And I like that you don't tell. Do people think you're psychic?
There's a bit of a line there where people will, and even I've been like, when I was doing my teacher training, it was funny because I was talking to my teacher where I was like, because people, when they're in the training with me, they go into little private sessions with themselves where they're practicing going in and out of their records. Mm-hmm. And I'm simply holding the space for them. And I remember saying to my teacher, I was like, am I supposed to know like what happens when they go into their records and they have these like 5 to 10 minutes to explore? Am I supposed to know when they come out what they did up there? And she was laughing. She's like, no, we're not psychics. We're not here to be doing, she's like, that's mediumship, which is totally an authentic profession, but it's not what we're doing. So that was just very relieving for me to be like, okay, because I did not know what was going on in these sessions with people. So that was just like very relieving for me. So yeah, I like that you're making that distinction. It's not psychic abilities. And another sort of example of this is I had a gentleman that came and saw me, and his soul was very, very childlike. And he was a grown man in his 40s who in the last sort of 10 years had really given himself over to the adult life. So his days were filled with, you know, filing certain things. Mm. It was just very like regimented, very adult-like, but he still had this very childish boy-like innocence about him when we met. And when we tunneled into his soul, a lot of his soul's purpose in this lifetime is to augment and accentuate this boy-like energy inside of him so that he reminds people in his adult waking state that this life is meant to be filled with joy and to find like the mundane silly, to find the miracles in these magic moments, and to be totally caught off guard on a hike to just watch and witness, like, you know, a little squirrel trying to find an acorn or something like that. Mm-hmm. But his ability to be able to claim that back for himself, because he felt it was almost like he'd reached a point where it was wrong for him to be that way. And he was trying to mold himself to be the way that society felt that he should be. And what that session did is it gave him such confirmation that who he was and how he was showing up was not only authentic, it's the mission of his soul in this lifetime.
Mm.
And so he's gone on to do some amazing work in starting programs that work with like getting people into the outdoors and exploring the outdoors and just making sure that that having fun is a big part of everyone's everyday, right?
Mm-hmm. You know what I really love about these examples that you shared, beyond the fact that I love stories, I love the fact that the soul mission that both of these clients that you mentioned seems on the surface to be individually focused, but the actions that they took from those had that ripple effect of impacting so many other lives. And I think that to me, that feels like it comes back to that connection that we all have with one another, that my soul purpose supports and lifts your soul purpose, which supports and lifts someone else's. So by not living at your highest level and not tapping into that, you're kind of missing that opportunity of greater service far beyond just yourself. Mm. So it's a really selfless thing to learn this and to implement it in your life because the effects are far reaching, mm-hmm. more so than just yourself.
And it creates ease.
Mm-hmm.
It makes the grind so much more easeful because you're tapping into the flow of the frequency that wants to work through you.
Do you find that if someone is not in touch spiritually, like they're more on that physical plane, that this is a harder thing for them to step into? Like, is it difficult for them to work with this? And have you had clients like that that came in and maybe weren't fully understanding? They felt a little resistant, because I know that we can get stuck right in the body. Mm. And it's even within the yogic space, I have a lot of people that get stuck in that space. It's really hard for them to tap into an intuitive inner voice. They want to deny it's there. They can't stay through Shavasana. They still get up and leave. I was that student when I started yoga. It's like all of the quiet space was really difficult to stay in, to even hear any of this. So have you worked with people like that? Because I think that might resonate, that answer, whatever you say might resonate with whoever's feeling that thought.
Yeah, well, two things. One, someone has to get to the point of booking in with me to have a session. So if they're at the point of booking, there must be some part of them that's open to the experience mm-hmm. that we're about to have. And I do, when people get really excited after a session and they're like, oh my God, I totally want to book a session for my husband or my mom or I just say to them, ask first if they would be open to doing this, rather than imposing this upon them, because it doesn't work that way, mm-hmm. number one. So that's the first piece. But what's really fun about the sessions is when you're in a session, you can't deny it.
Yeah.
So even if someone comes in a skeptic, I've had a gentleman come in and he basically was at rock bottom and was not sure which direction to go. The pandemic had done a lot to his mental stability. And so he was like, I have zero expectation, was how he came in. And one of the things that I think just hit him and clicked with him so much, to me, it was very unassuming, but to him, it was big. We had this insight into a past life where he was on a boat and he was a map maker. Now I'm forgetting the actual name of the profession, but he
cartographer.
Was yes.
Isn't it a cartographer?
Thanks. Mm-hmm. And we were shown this moment in his book of life, because it was a very happy mm-hmm. lifetime that he experienced. And that happiness wanted to come through into the session. And what made his life so joyful at that time was he was surrounded by nature. He spent most of his life in nature. He was able to use his intellect to make maps. Like, the cartography was huge. And he was actually single in this lifetime. And his purpose was to simply show others that striving is not necessary in order to be free.
Ooh, that's a great sentence right there. I loved that. How did he implement that as he moved forward after he worked with you?
So what blew his hair back was in this lifetime, he loves topographical maps. He studies them all the time. He has them laid out on his dining room table. He's always looking at topographical maps. And when he gets the opportunity to go out in nature, he's always trying to find a new place that he hasn't been before. So that was the click for him. That was the mm-hmm. part where he was like, okay, there's something to this than mm-hmm. just what I thought was going to happen here. And then I think for him, his biggest takeaway is that for him, nature is non-negotiable. It's a complete reset for him. Anytime he has the opportunity to go out into nature and to just walk in the hills and do what he does, it completely sets his soul at peace, and it's a reset for him. And what he was doing prior to that recognition or that honoring of himself was he was just doing the grind so much that mm-hmm. he was not prioritizing his time in nature because he felt it was self-indulgent or not as important as the family life that he had to take care of. So it helped him to reprioritize that and to also give himself permission, because his soul mission in that lifetime is running through this lifetime as well. He's never been an individual. He's highly talented. He's a, mm-hmm. he's a carpenter and a welder and amongst many other things. And everyone's always suggesting to him how to make a business out of what it is that he does. And he always just loves just, he's like, I just love building things. I love making things. I love doing things, these things. And as soon as I start to tie it into a financial endeavor or an entrepreneurship, it loses its luster.
Mm-hmm.
So for him, it was, he just gets to be in this lifetime. That's it.
That's beautiful. Well, and having that awareness too, because we're really pushed around by cultural norms, society, even people encouraging him, you should take that thing you love and make it into a business, and feeling as though it's not worth our time unless we do, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's hugely valuable because it just gives you that reaffirmation of you're on the right path. It doesn't have to look the way that people are suggesting, that it looks the way it's supposed to look.
Yeah, and what's beautiful is that it gives permission for other people to also be that way. Like his, when he's pushed into service, it diminishes his spirit. But mm-hmm. his service is in honoring his spirit so much to be that that's the ripple effect that it sends out, that other people get to be, but that's not his intention for doing it.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I don't know that anyone has that, even and like any of the people that you shared, their intention was to live their soul's purpose. And the beautiful side product or byproduct was that ripple impact on others.
100%. The other extension of this though, is I know my soul is happiest when I'm taking what I'm learning and I'm able to digest it and assimilate it and offer it back out again. Like I love teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a big service to my soul to be able to teach whatever it is that I'm offering. And that's what sets my soul on fire.
And I can tell as we talk, you'd have a really nice glow. It's a love for the subject, but it's also just a love for the actual sharing that you're doing as well. So yeah. I like that.
Thanks.
So I want people to know how they can find you, because I think what you're doing is, for one, unique. And it's also just something that it sounds like not only will it help individuals, it can really have a healing effect on the turmoil that we're experiencing in life right now. And as we're recording this, things are early in chaos and flux. And I know healing is necessary. And whether that's finding ourselves through a records reading, whether that's, you know, coming to a retreat in Mexico at the most beautiful place ever that you're holding in November, I just think it looks just stunning. So tell us a little bit about how people can work with you. You're in British Columbia, but we're not restricted by, you know, location. So really anyone can reach out. So just share a little bit there.
Yeah. So if anyone just wants to get a little bit more familiar with my frequency and doesn't want any strings attached, the easiest way is to go to my website, heatherivany.com. So HEATHERIVANY yogany.com. And I have a little join my free course button right on the homepage there. And that's a 7-day email drip that just helps to, it's called a spiritual reset, just helps to bring you back center if you've gotten pulled into distraction. And then I go live twice a month on Instagram, and that handle is just my first name, Heather, and then _Ivany. And those meditations have a small discourse at the beginning, theme based on the month. And then I lead us into a meditation afterwards. So January's theme was sovereignty, February's theme was service, and now we're moving into asking, like, what is sacred? So those are the two free ways to get in touch with me. But all of my information on Akashic readings or trainings or my 4-month long mentorship program is through my website. And yes, everything I do is through Zoom, other than my retreat that's in Mexico, just outside of Sayulita in November. And yeah, full credit to Joanna Haynes, who I'm co-teaching that with. She found the location and booked everything and took care of that side of things. So she's just a beautiful human and soul as well that I get to co-facilitate with for that week.
Well, I think it sounds like there's something for everyone. So if this sounded at all interesting to all of these listeners and you beautiful people, I would say look into it. And I actually did look at your 7-day email drip. So don't be surprised if you see my email pop up in there, because
nice.
I'm always about growing spiritually. And I just thought that would be a useful place to start there. So it's been a pleasure to have you on the show today. Is there anything else that we didn't get to that you wanted to share before we sign off?
No, I think you did a beautiful job of covering it, Heather. Well done.
Well, you know, you put the two Heathers together and you just never know what's going to happen there. So thank you so much for being on the podcast today. Before you go, was this episode helpful for you? Well, the most helpful thing you can do in return is to leave a review in iTunes. The reviews are what keep the podcast going. And be sure to subscribe and share this episode if you loved it. You can connect with me online at AyurvedaLifeSchool.com, on Instagram, and on Facebook at Ayurveda Life School. Have a beautiful day. Namaste.